Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and presenting now, your host. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. He's the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. It is Mr. Tim Goodman. I don't know. David Letterman's going to go off the air. I'm feeling a little announcery today.
I like it. I like it. I'm feeling the same vibes.
34 weeks in a row now. Boom. 34
Boom.
Weeks in a row.
34 weeks.
How about that?
Man, we are just... It's. I tweeted out that this was version 3.0. I'm not sure if that's true.
It may be 4.0. It's unclear. I think it may be 4.0. Depends on how you count. There's
been
a chronicle.
A lot in 8 years.
There was the post chronicle when we did occasional ones. Then there was the sort of like the relaunch with interviews but that only went like a couple episodes. Yeah. And then there's this one. So,
yep.
Depends on how you count it. So before we're going to talk about Mad Men today, right? Because the Mad Men finale is coming.
What?
You think?
Is it?
It is.
On a Sunday?
Did you know? Were you aware that Mad Men is ending? Did you know?
That's crazy talk.
If you're expecting a cliffhanger, you will be sorely disappointed on Sunday night.
Or if you get one, you'll be sorely disappointed.
I wonder what Journey song they will play at the end. Are you being inundated with theories?
Oh, yes. So many. I can't even... I don't read anything like that. I actually don't read any other writers who are peers of mine. I don't read any of their stuff.
Because you want to be fresh. You don't want to be polluted with, like, you don't want to write their columns, right?
Right. I mean, if I know them and they've like, tweeted something out, I generally will retweet that without reading it. I stay away from theories, and I'm getting a lot of them in my mail. And so sometimes you can almost, because you can see a little bit of the first sentence. And so it has, I will just say, just being able to see that 15 or 20 words sentence that starts it makes me die laughing. Sometimes, I mean, it is just, some of these are absurd, my friend. So bad.
Well, I think we've determined, and you said, if anybody is jumping out of a building, then there is a colossal failure.
That would be the worst Mad Men ending, and I might jump out a window because I love this show so much. I don't want it to end like that. No. I don't think it will end like that.
The opening sequence was the end all along.
What a that tricky is a, little yeah.
Boo. Ugh. So before we get into Mad Men, I've got a few like quick topics before we do non-Mad Men related that we could get out of the clear out of the way before
sure.
we get to the main topic. Mm-hmm. And this is meant to be a sort of the all Mad Men edition. So it's just some quickies. We should say, and people who follow us on Twitter know this, but there was a TVTM meetup at the Giants game last Friday night, which was
sure
literally
was.
That we recorded this show and then both were going to the Giants game and ended up sitting fairly near each other. So my wife and I came over and we said, hey, yeah. This isn't a podcast. It's a baseball game. And it was nice to see you. That was a funny moment where you didn't want to ask me to come over, but you provided all the information about where you were in case I would like to take the initiative to come visit.
I'm not very social.
Which I did.
I'm not very social.
I had to, you know, tip my cap. And then we drank out of the championship
mugs.
Trophies. Yeah.
Yeah. The third one.
Yeah,
what
you
nice.
Do is, they come, people don't know this, but they put, there's that like ring of flags around the outside, but they put like a big plastic cup in the middle. It's like a cup holder.
Yeah,
and then you
kind of
and then you sip the champagne from that.
Mm-hmm. They just pass it around the stadium. I mean, there's three. There's a lot to go around, so there's three in a row.
Well, you're going to the upper deck, the lower deck, and the club level all get their own now. It's pretty nice. Some garlic fries in there.
Oh, obnoxious Giants fans.
Yep,
yeah, we're
us.
So good.
Mm-hmm. We should talk about, you tweeted a great story by Leslie Goldberg at The Hollywood Reporter talking about Al Jean, the executive producer of The Simpsons, basically saying regarding Harry Shearer quitting or not signing his contract and announcing on Twitter that he wouldn't be coming back to do voices on The Simpsons for the next two seasons. And his response, Al Jean's response, is sort of like, we don't understand why he's saying what he's saying. It doesn't make any sense. He should call James L. Brooks to discuss this. Please call. It is hilarious. It's sad because it's like the show is going to change because of this, but it's just hilarious that he seems completely baffled at Harry Shearer's behavior.
If for nothing else, that story is fantastic because you have Al Jean, who is a Simpsons mainstay from, you know, so far back, and has really been the driving force in the show for so long. he just, and a powerful, super powerful guy, obviously, in Hollywood. He's just so at his wit's end in that story. It's fun to read it because he's like, I don't know what you want. You tweeted out that you were quitting because you don't have any. We're not going to let you do other things, but that's crazy. We let you do everything. And then he details basically
you can
that
phone
the guy
it in.
Phones in. You can phone it in. You don't even have to phone it in when we're on the other line. You can phone it in at any time. And it's basically $14 million left on the table, then some. So
$14 million. And what you get for that is you get an hour per episode for a read through. So that's about 40 hours of work over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, you know, and your recording sessions, and this is all can happen remote. And then your recording sessions, which again, you can just do from your country house in England and takes, I got the impression even less time than that because he's only got so many characters in every episode. So for a very small amount of work, here is $14 million. And hey, good for Harry Shearer if he doesn't want to do it. But Al Jean just seems baffled. Like, why are you saying this? And, you know, is this a ploy or are you just a crazy person?
It didn't make any sense. And it engendered no sympathy for Shearer, and he shouldn't have taken his whatever contractual gripes he has because no one else has the same gripes he does.
No, everyone else has signed the same contract.
Everyone's signed. It's the same money. That's how they always do it. It's a package deal. No one is to get any more. So he can't get any more. And it's just free money for like 20 hours of work a year. That you can do from England on the phone.
Well, it's going to be good work for Billy West and a bunch of those other really great voice actors who will probably just swoop in and do it if he doesn't. Although I did like that moment where he's like, seriously, call James L. Brooks. Harry, if you're reading this. The phrase, Harry, if you're reading this, is in that article. That's just amazing. Call James L. Brooks. We'll talk you down. Tell him what kind of pills you took and we'll work it out.
It is so great because even prior to that, because what started that, you know, Harry Shearer did that on he put three tweets out on Twitter about it. And then James L. Brooks tweeted out that, hey, we tried and we're trying and we want him back. And then he's like, no, really, Harry, call me. We'll work it out on Twitter, which is so great. No, really, Harry, call me.
Yeah.
We're just two billionaires trying to discuss each other over social media.
Well, and sending messages in the Hollywood Reporter too. Harry, if you're reading this, call us.
Yeah.
If you're reading this, how can we reach Harry Shearer? We'll put classified ads in newspapers.
I guess they're not following each other.
That's how badly it's broken down.
Chaos.
I'm also reminded. So another thing that I've been linking to one of your tweets this last few days, which is one of Goodman's laws. We should compile a list, which is do not judge. First off, rule number one: do not judge a series by its pilot. Right? We've talked about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And rule two is: do not judge a series by a trailer cut from scenes from its pilot, because now you're like in a fantasy of a mirage. It has nothing to do with the show. Don't watch them. And if you do watch them, don't judge them. And this came up because there were a whole bunch of trailers released this week based on pilots, or in one case, which I found actually kind of brilliant and weird, a show without a pilot, the new Arrow and Flash spinoff, they like shot fake scenes to make a trailer, which is even weirder, but at least they're trying to be representative. But like the Supergirl trailer was released and there was much controversy. And I just kept telling people, first off, it's just the pilot. So they literally can't show you anything but the pilot. And then they cut that into a trailer. And, you know, look at Tim's tweet. This is not representative of anything that you will see in the show, other than maybe some of the actors, but probably not all of them.
Yes, don't freak out. Don't freak out. Don't judge it, and don't freak out. Two things.
Yep, because it's not going to tell you anything.
No, and I don't even
know why they release them. I mean, because they often will craft these things for the upfronts, just to get people excited the upfronts, and then they put them out. And I'm not sure whether that's good or bad. I'm not sure whether it's leading to hype or, I mean, I guess if people are talking about it, that is valuable, even if, you know, all publicity is good publicity, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. But, I actually, even prior to that, I went on Twitter and I was kind of appalled because, you know, I saw an outlet who I will not name, it's definitely not THR, that was basically reviewing the pilot clips to judge the pilot based on a full season, whether it'll be any good or not. And that is amateur hour. I'm sorry. And so I went on, and you know, there are a couple of professional critics who are involved and stuff like that. And I just went on Twitter and said, you know what? This has literally nothing to do with actual criticism. And if you partake in this, it's very bad. Yeah. I think I was a little more critical than that, but it was very bad. I'm sure someone got upset at me for doing that. But you know, Alan Sepinwall also added to that conversation. He agrees. And the thing that he said was, oftentimes looking at trailers ruins the pilot.
Yeah.
Because they really only put those parts in, and that's done by the advertising department. It's not done by the showrunner or the writers. And so,
well, I can tell you what happens. I can tell you what happens in the Supergirl pilot, yeah. Right? I mean, we literally saw so one, it's a problem because people judge it and say, so this is what the show is going to be like. It's like, right. No, it's very clearly the show is going to start with her being this put upon worker in this awful job in LA. And then she's going to have like this moment where she realizes she's going to, you know, be Supergirl and get a costume and save an airplane and all of these things. And that's like, that's how you introduce the show. And then week to week, it will be something different. But so first off, it's misleading, right? Because it's, yep. Pilots are misleading. Pilots are set up. They're not the show. And then two, it's so easy for people to misread this thing. But even if they see it, they've just seen you've seen the pilot. I know now what happens. I know, like, I feel like I know the first scene and the last scene and most of the scenes in between of Supergirl's pilot now, because they were all in the trailer, cut up into little bits. But it was very clearly just, that's all they have to work with. So at right. least with the what is it, Legends of Tomorrow, the Flash and Arrow spinoff, at least that one, you know, they wrote some dialogue to give away what the premise is and then recorded a bunch of actors on a rooftop having a conversation about it and then in character. But, you know, at least there it was something not built to be anything but a trailer. And that, I actually think that's way better, because then, you know, the writers know what they're getting into. They're like literally just teasing their show, as opposed to some advertising person cutting together a trailer from a pilot that is maybe not representative of the show anyway.
Yeah. I mean, silly. Yeah. Stay away. That's the bottom
upfronts. Don't pay attention.
Exactly.
Speaking, it's not a thing. And speaking of things that aren't a thing.
Yes.
CSI Cyber was renewed. Oh, God.
Yes. And do you know, now Ted Danson may join.
Yeah, it sounds like Ted Danson is going to be airlifted from CSI, which is going off the air. They're doing like a, you know, Deadwood can't get a wrap-up movie, but CSI can get a wrap-up movie.
Yeah.
Peter McNichol is going to leave, which is he like Mandy Patinkin, tends to be the, yeah, sure, I'll do your show, but only for a year. And then, you know, then I'm going to go do something else. And they were on that one show together, and they both, I think, left the show after a year or two. So Peter McNichol out, Ted Danson in. So, boy, yeah, that'll help. That Ted Danson will solve that show.
I can tell you right now, I don't care who they put in there. They have better watch out for their Wi-Fi access.
Yeah.
If their IP address is a mess and their Wi-Fi access,
they could
black
get hacked.
Hats,
they could get hacked. The black hats could hack them, and then they would be
start a fire.
Owned.
A fire will be started through the internet. I'm sorry, uh-huh. That's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, they're gonna tackle your Bluetooth and your gas barbecue, and they're gonna ignite
on
your
the
house.
Deep web.
In the
Duh.
They are. Well, there's salted hashes on the deep web that are full of black hat codes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So good luck,
it's
Ted Danson.
Scary. Good luck, Ted. Put that fire out.
Yeah.
Huh? CSI.
Bring some Becker in there.
Yeah.
Cheers.
You can't. You know what? You can't put a microphone or a microscope on the internet, buddy. You can't.
Or a microphone. That's what we say here in podcast land. You can't put a microphone on the internet. Anyway, that's all the news I have for this week.
It's kind of crazy.
There were trailers. CSI Cyber got renewed. Harry Shearer is off the reservation, and we saw a baseball game. That's pretty much all that happened.
We were busy.
Yeah. So Mad Men.
Yes. I hear that's ending.
I've got some notes from listeners and readers. Yeah. And then I don't know, you know, where do you want to start? Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of what your expectations are for the finale? Do you have them?
Well, you know, I did a piece. We'll link to that.
Right.
And of course, I even tweeted out today that everybody's read so many pieces now that no one wants to do it again.
No.
I actually don't want to read or write one until the finale, and so I probably won't. But the one that I did earlier this week, I think I did it a day after, so almost after the last episode, was sort of recapping where we were and where we were going forward. And I have been doing like twice a week and trying to really delve into it. And, you know, it's I think the short of it is we're in a really good spot. I think there's anything can happen. We're in a really good spot. But what I said as far as like as you're constructing this finale, and I do think there will be a time jump, is that we last left him. He's on a bus stop in Oklahoma without a car. And, you know, we're in a world without cell phones. We know that Betty Betty has cancer, but she's got 9 months to a year to live. So he doesn't have to race back there, which allows Matt Weiner to do a lot of things with Don sitting at that bus stop. He can go anywhere. I believe he's going to go west. He was going to go to the Grand Canyon, but he doesn't have a car anymore. So I'm not sure that's where he's going. Giving the car away and going through all the stuff that he went through, part of it was sort of purging his military past, the albatross of how guilty he felt for accidentally killing his CEO, although he didn't admit to stealing his identity. But as I pointed out, that's already been covered pretty extensively in earlier Mad Men episodes because of how he how Pete, of all people, has sort of unmasked him a full two times. And that's how they actually, I think, became closer the second time when Pete helped him out in a real spot there. So I think that we have him sitting at a bus stop, but we also have almost everything done, Jason. I think that he's shed a lot of the past. He's said goodbye to most people in a way that I think is perfectly fine. In fact, I think he could leave everybody now in that series and be fine with that. Two weeks ago, I talked about how, you know, he had left and it might be the last time we see him in scenes with anybody else. I think he's going to get to California. That's the interesting part. I don't know how he's going to get there or how long it's going to take to get there. I think he will get there. And then I think there will be a time jump back to New York that would put him in a scene with, I think, and I kind of hope, Peggy and probably Sally. Those are the only two ones that I personally think could use a little bit more patching up because the last time he talked to both of them, it was a little bit of a tense situation, particularly with Peggy. So they have so much history. It would be nice to see them together again for one scene or two scenes, but it doesn't have to be that way. I don't think he's going to flash back to a funeral with Betty. I think that's a kind of a cliche thing anyway, but I don't think he'll do it because it pretty much take away his chance to tell any California stories. So, you know, anything can happen. I'm at the point now where I've written enough about it, Jason, and I've read enough about it, and I've seen it,
just ready to have it be.
I'm just ready to have it, but I'm also happy. I'm fine wherever it's going to go. I don't think that he can mess up the finale. And these are to me, the next episode is the hardest episode in TV history. It's how a really great series goes out in its finale because we have so many crazy people, fans and viewers and critics even have so many sort of crazy bits of agenda that they want met in that finale. It's almost impossible. And so I prefer to say, as I've said before, it's Matt Weiner's story. He can tell it however he wants to tell it. And I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch it for the 1 hour and 11 minutes that it's going to be on. And I'm going to love it probably. And if not, I'm just going to say, you know what? Okay, that maybe not the ending that I wanted, but I respect that it's his ending. And I'm going to try to understand the decisions he made in doing what he did. That's all I can do. But I already know going forward that when I write not my finale review the next day or that night, but when I do my summation of where Mad Men stands sort of in the pantheon of great series, I think I'm pretty confident I know where I'm going to put it. So, yeah.
My friend John Gruber, who does the Daring Fireball blog, wrote last week, that it's his favorite show of all time, and only the only one that comes close for him is The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he likes Mad Men a lot, but that is rarefied air up there. Is it in that kind of portion of the pantheon for you?
Oh yeah, it is.
It's up there.
I think that I think the only series. And the great thing about writing a story like that is we can argue all we want, but I think that there's a thing that I'm not going to say here right now, but there's a thing that Mad Men did that the others haven't done that really is amazing. But yeah, it's to me, it's right up there with The Wire. I have Sopranos a little bit of a notch below The Wire, but it's right up there with The Wire, which to me was the best show ever created. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm going to have some interesting arguments to roll out.
That's cool.
And I don't think the finale, no matter whatever happens, I don't think that's going to change my mind.
So this is what I wanted to get to is one of our pieces of feedback was from James Epler in the 806 Lubbock, perhaps Don's next stop, he says. he says, is there anything Mad Men could do to tarnish its reputation in the finale? Have somebody go out a window, have Don be D.B. Cooper, anything
well,
else?
If either of those or both of those happen, yes, I think it's gonna end up farther
well,
down
D.B.
the list
Cooper
than I had expected.
Jumps out of a plane, so you'd get a twofer there.
Yeah, you would get that. That'd be like a jump, yeah. No, I think that the D.B. Cooper theory is the dumbest Mad Men theory that's ever, ever been concocted. And B, I just don't think that he will fall out a window. Well, you know, it's funny. Somebody had said... somebody had said in an email to me, it was very funny. They said, I think you wrote that it was weird. So it's, I'll have to find the email, but it was somebody who said that he knew. And later, I think it said he knew from me, which I started laughing because I don't remember this, but he said he knew that, that the person falling out of the window was supposed to be a minor character. Whether it was Harry, or if it was at the time, maybe it was going to be Roger falling, who's not a minor character, obviously, but at the time he was thought it was just going to be like a tag on falling out the window, and it was never supposed to be Don. And then the same story, and I think you had that conversation, and you actually wrote about it after the first or second season when you talked to Matt Weiner, which would be hilarious if I sat on it this whole time and never did. Oh, right. I forgot. Which would be very much like me, by the way. I forgot. Matt said that. No, that's not Don. That would have put, you know, I don't know, what, 5 years of talking about it out the thing? I could have helped out a lot, I guess.
Those people would have just found something else.
They would have found something
else. They would have all moved over to D.B. Cooper then.
But to answer the question, no, I honestly don't think so, because to me, there's no way that the finale to The Sopranos ruined The Sopranos. I know a lot of people in the time when it happened thought that. And of course, it's one of the most divisive finales ever. And people are still adamant that it was ruined, or he did something, or he's dead, or whatever, which is fine. Think what you want. But that didn't ruin it for me. I thought that was a brilliant ending. And so, no, I don't think that there's anything that can happen in the Mad Men finale that's going to tarnish its long-term reputation.
All right. I got a couple other there's some really good ones here. John Broughton in the 925 says, what time appropriate song would you like to hear at the end? I hope it's something upbeat. It's going to be a rough week for TV viewers. So any thoughts about, like, you know, '70s music that might be playing at the end of Mad Men?
Well, it's funny because I think that the song that I originally thought, I think it was the 69, though, it's the Stones, You Can't Always Get What You Want. But I think that's 69, not 70. And he'll be towards the end of – there could be a time jump. So it could be into farther than we think. So right. It's hard to predict that song. But honestly, I actually don't think that Mad Men can top Peggy Lee's cover of Is That All There Is. To me, it was just like that. That is the best song that wraps up Don's existential crisis. To a T. So I don't think that can be beat. It's not my favorite song in the world, of course. I love that it's totally dark and bleak, and that Peggy Lee sings it in like this sort of like diffident, offhand, like whatever jaded manner that she does is brilliant, and they used it brilliantly. But yeah, I think people will start talking about it. But you know, the funny thing is, you never know, right? Because everything Mad Men has been about 90% consistent. You know, they've used the Decemberists, which was sort of off topic there, off genre and year. Mm-hmm. And then last week, you know, they used a song to close out that one that had no – it wasn't even in the right year. It didn't even make any sense. I mean, Buddy Holly's Every Day. I mean, it's not even – it's 1957, so it was pre the start of the show. And I couldn't find a reason why it would be there. And somebody says, oh, it's like every day the end's getting, you know, it's getting closer, meaning the end. I'm like, I really don't think like it meaning the end of the series, no. And it's an upbeat song to think, oh, the end of the dawn is here. I have no idea. That's why I threw in there that like, what is that? Probably it means nothing. It's like one of those things that if you throw in there, it's the Russian going into the woods. Wow. It means less than we think it does. I did put in my deconstruction a week or two ago that who knows? I mean, Buddy Holly's from Lubbock, Texas. He's Oklahoma. He's sitting right on top of it. He could actually head that way before he moves. Who knows? I also have a theory, not a theory, but like a you just at this point you just put your hands in the air. You know, Jason, like, I don't know.
Yep.
But the last week's episode started with two weeks ago. See, it's blurring. There's been so many of them. But Don's secretary says to him in the halls of McCann Erickson, I can't have you lost. And then there's a reference to being lost in the middle of it. And then when Don goes to Racine, so it was two episodes ago, when Don goes to Racine, he says to Diana's husband, she seems so lost. So I don't know. And then that theme has come up a couple of times about being lost. And, you know, maybe Don just gets lost. You know, he's on a bus. He's on a bus stop somewhere. Maybe remember he's just traveling. There is no way to connect to him. People are like, oh, he's got to get back to New York because Betty's dying. He needs to pick up the kids and take them. Yeah, I think he's got a year to deal with that. So who knows what can happen. But again, at this point, we're reading so much into the tea leaves that I think that we're probably way, way off base.
Do you think with John's wish for something upbeat, what tone do you think the ending is going to strike? If you had to guess, is it going to be dark? Is it going to be ambiguous? Is it, you know, where do you think the series leaves us off?
I think it leaves us off. And appropriately, I think in a kind of introspective space. You know, I've written that, you know, in my last one, that if we could have a scene where Don is like on the beach in California looking out into the ocean, and that's it. Hmm. You know, he could be reading a book, which he often is reading a book, put it down, have his shades on, look out into the ocean, and it ends. I don't think it's going to be tidy. I don't think it's going to be bleak, other than Don's life is pretty bleak, and I don't know what – I mean, to me right now, the big push and pull for the finale is can someone change? And we've talked about that Matt Weiner doesn't really believe people change. I love the fact that I wrote this. I totally called that Pete and Trudy getting back together. And mm-hmm. So that was change. That was change in a positive way. They got back together. There was some happiness there. But for Don, I think he has changed, actually. My whole point when I wrote this piece was that from year one to year seven, he's changed a lot. And he's changed a lot in the last seven episodes of this last 14, because once he realized that Rachel died, it really turned his life around. But I pointed out to people that all of season seven, Don has been really good to everybody around him. He's been he hasn't been a dick. He's been good. He's happy. He's kind of content. I don't know if he knows that yet. And that's something that we all kind of come into terms with ourselves somewhere near the end. And I wrote in my last piece was, I think we're going to find him, Jason, that Matt Weiner puts him somewhere where he realizes, you know, I don't know if this is happiness, but it's happy enough. And so I think some kind of introspection, some kind of long gaze like that will happen. Or him driving someplace, or being, maybe we just see him driving in the middle of nowhere. I have no idea, but it all goes back to my feeling that the same thing that David Chase did in The Sopranos is going to happen in Mad Men, and that is that Matt Weiner is going to, if the story is not going to end, we're going to stop seeing the story that he's telling us, but the story doesn't end, and that's how a good storyteller can tie up a lot of loose ends without actually tying them up, is to say, oh, well, yeah, if you're worried that you didn't see Don and Peggy together, don't worry. You're not going to see it, but they're clearly going to get together again. They're both alive. They'll make a call to each other. It's the things that you don't see. A good storyteller often doesn't have to tell you that, oh, yes, they'll hug. I mean, I wouldn't mind that. I would love a great scene of Don and Peggy kind of coming together, since they were mad at – well, she was mad at him the last time they were actually in the same room together. But you don't need that as a storyteller. So I think that the notion that and as I said in my piece, it's like they're not going to – Don's not going to be somewhere or where a bunch of people come in and kill him, and then you know what the ending is. You know, it's like we're the whole family's dad or something. That's not going to be how it is.
There's a guy in a members-only jacket.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's not what Chase did. Right? He could have killed the entire Soprano family, and then you would have had a closure for the entire thing. But you don't. And I think that that's just the story. These characters live on, some shorter than others, but we're not going to see the rest of that story. We're going to see all that Matt Weiner chooses to show us. But that's, to me, that's kind of happy that way.
It seems unlikely that the last scene of the show is going to be the induction into the Advertising Hall of Fame, and several of our characters are there, and they're all in old age makeup, and it's 1985 or something like that, right? It seems unlikely.
It seems unlikely. However, I would just I don't think I would like it, but if they do flash forward, and again, there could be more than one flash forward in the sit-out. I think we'll get one. I mean, and by flash forward, I mean I think we talked about this, that the series has very quietly been jumping ahead 1 month per episode, except for last week, which was a continuation of him driving the car through the country. And so it wasn't a month between episodes there. So it's been moving pretty quickly. I think we're in like September, October now, or pretty close to it in 70. And so I think we're going to have a time jump so that he gets back to New York. I think we'll see that. But I wouldn't rule out, although I don't want it to happen, some kind of thing where we see an older version of Don. And if we do that, I don't think we'll see an older version of everybody. Just as I wrote, I think it seems very unwinder-like to be so tidy. But you're in a situation where here's a guy, you can do anything, right? So you're basically writing the ending from scratch. You can do you don't have to have him go back and get fired from McCann Erickson. You don't have to any of that stuff. Whatever you want to do, you can do. And it's kind of freeing that way as a storyteller. I'm sure he knew some level of where he wanted to go. He was very tidy in that way. In that way only, I think, is that he knows what's going to happen to Don. But I don't think we're going to get him in the 80s, which is probably good.
It's probably all for the best.
It's probably all for the best.
Well, if the show ends up kind of finishing in October of 70, then the big ending will be that I was born.
There you go.
There you go.
Right?
Right then.
I know.
Me. That was the world I came into. How did we ever get out of the 70s, I ask you. Really nice theory. It's a little bit of a theory. It came from two different listeners, but I like this because it's not a D.B. Cooper kind of theory. It's more of a theme kind of theory, and I like it, so I'm going to share these with you.
Okay.
It comes from Alan in the 415, who is on almost every episode because he sends in lots of feedback.
Likes.
And also from John Belk on Twitter. Crazy prediction for the last episode of Mad Men, Alan says, Don introduces himself to someone as Dick Whitman. He's been shedding all the components of his Don Draper identity, and the last episode was full of references to starting over. I wouldn't be surprised if Don's character arc is to either reclaim his original identity or integrate it with his Don Draper identity. And John Belk said the same thing. Don meets someone and introduces himself as Dick Whitman, and that's how it ends. I think that's an interesting idea.
Yes, I don't think that's going to happen. And here's why.
Sorry, Alan and John. Interesting.
Or as Peggy says, let me just tell you, you tell me your theory and let me shit all over it.
There we go. We earned the explicit check mark again. Thank you.
Oh, well, that's what she said.
So I enjoy that. I enjoy that theory, but yeah, go ahead. Tell him why it won't be that.
He can't be that. He can't be Dick Whitman. Dick Whitman's dead. And so he can't be that. He has to be Don Draper. And he has all the identifying. I mean, everything in his life now is paper that's tied to Don Draper, including a social security card, including titles to houses and everything else.
What about him starting over with just a new identity and just leaving Don Draper entirely behind and like shedding his skin and moving, just becoming in Lubbock, Texas, becoming, you know, somebody totally different?
Yeah, I mean, there's that is a little. I don't think that will happen because I think he realized how hard it was. And remember, he also said in the penultimate episode, I don't know the kid's name, but the kid who was the maid, which was great. John's like, you're the maid. It was like some, you know, 19-year-old kid, the one he gives the Cadillac to. He tells that person, basically, the whole thing is he's trying to save this guy from making the same mistakes that Dick Whitman / Don Draper did. And as he says, if you do this, and if you go into this life that you're doing with this con, you're going to have to change your identity, and you don't, and it's not what you think. And so,
yeah, the consequence, I mean, that's how I feel about all of these kinds of identity theories, is that this is a show about the consequences of what Don has done. Mm-hmm. So to have him change his identity or revert back to some old identity, I feel like that's showing him kind of like, oh, no consequences. I'm just going to move on with my life. And I feel like that's not what the show is about.
Well, and also, like, look at the toll that, I mean, certainly the, you know, I mean, the mental toll. So this, again, a totally existential, the toll it took when he changed his identity and became somebody, he was really, to have that albatross around your life, that secret for so long, really mm-hmm. tore him up. And it was revealed, every time it was revealed, he was a disaster. And from Peggy to Pete, or Pete to Peggy, Pete to Betty, sorry. It was just terrible. And so I don't think that he would assume a new identity, because he realizes that that's a lot of work and it's a big lie and that's hard to live a lie. But I don't think that he'll go back to, I mean, I actually have heard the Dick Whitman one a lot. I think the simple one to that is that Dick Whitman is dead. And if you call yourself Dick Whitman and it sort of comes up again, his big thing is to be found out as a deserter, which is it's a terrible offense. And, you know, you could really do some jail time on that one. He doesn't want to be a deserter and he doesn't want to have that around. So I don't think that he, and you know what? He never liked being Dick Whitman.
Right.
And that's why he wanted to quit all that stuff in his past. So I don't know. But I think that part of the identity thing is he's accepted his identity. I think that's kind of what it is. He's accepted who he is.
Well, isn't that a great resolution to this existential story about Don Draper and who he is? Is, like you said, a moment of realization or introspection of that this is the life he's made his life. And mm-hmm. this is what it is, and this is who he is, and having that kind of understanding.
I think that was a pretty clear message in last week's episode when he tells the kid, it's not what you think, and it doesn't give you the freedom that you think it's going to, and when you change your identity, it's a pain in the ass. That's why he set that kid, try to, you know, set him straight. And there's things that he's done said too. He said, when he gives him the car, he's like, don't ruin this, you know, don't ruin this chance. And so I think that I don't think Don's going to ruin anything else that he's done right now. He's kind of come to terms with who he is. I love that he's shedding everything, you know. He's giving up his cars, his apartment. He's shedding everything. So he's starting again. I think there's the idea of you can start again as – you don't have to change your name to start again. You can start again as a person. And I think that's why he's going to end up in California.
We have one other Mad Men related question, which is something silly from Ben Smith, who asks, with Mad Men going off the air, will this leave room in the schedule for the Riches to come back? Ding.
You know, it always comes full circle.
Old reference from 1.0 TV Talk Machine.
Yeah, it's a TV Talk Machine.
Well played, Ben. Well played. Anything more we should talk about Mad Men before we move to the finale? And I guess we'll break it down next week. But
yeah, I think that again, I think right now everybody's feeling worn out about all this stuff. Yeah. So yeah, but I would just say I definitely think that there is something when you think about forget the finale, but thinking about the legacy of this series, which honestly not a whole lot of people watched. It's not one of the most watched shows in the history of television. Certainly one of the most acclaimed, but you have to really be impressed that a series that was around for 7 seasons, and like, it's hard to do high end quality for that long, but that has so many people talking about it and wanting to discuss it, you know, referencing back to Alan Sepinwall. And I talked to him on the back channels about this column that he wrote about, you know, staying up on Sunday nights to do these like recaps of Mad Men they're not just recaps. I mean, they were whole new things that all of us were doing, or most of us were doing, which is trying to add like another layer of bonus criticism, as we said in a previous podcast, onto the show. And so few shows actually move you to do that. Now, he's done it a lot more. He does it with a lot of shows. But when he and I were talking sort of back channel, what I was trying to tell him, or what I said to him, was I haven't actually done this that much. The shows that I mean, I did it a little bit where I was joking around on a couple of series and I stopped doing it. But the series that I did it for Sopranos, super deep dives into the Sopranos. And I did it for Breaking Bad and Mad Men. And that's it. And I can't, as much as I love The Americans, which has just finished a brilliant third season, I haven't done any of those. And no other series has prompted me to sort of go, like, what is the meaning of this series? Not just, like, what happened, which is a recap. And what are the ramifications of what happened? But what's the meaning in all of this? And so no shows, I mean, like, three that have been so big picture have made me do it. And I kind of miss that. I'm going to miss the fact – I mean, I'm not going to miss the writing, but I'm going to miss the – you know, like, that Alan's whole point was, like, I'm not going to miss, like, not getting any sleep. He's on the East Coast, though. I'm not going to miss – all the effort and extra writing and kind of hurting my brain as I try to figure out what's going on. But I will definitely miss, like, you're reading a really good book and you're trying to figure out what happens. And there's all these big adult issues in it. And that's the thing that drives me crazy when people say, oh, it's just about advertising and drinking and screwing and stuff. And it's like, no, actually, this is about life. And the genius is how Matt Weiner made something so, like, esoterically and academically strong become something that people could relate to because there was drinking and screwing and smoking and great fashion and modernism. So it's a show that has, I think, a little bit for everybody to deep dive into.
Nice. Well, we'll break it down one more time next week.
Absolutely.
And I like some of those pieces. I've experienced a little of that now that we're doing on the TV podcast on Incomparable. We're doing some post-episode podcasts, and it's the same sort of thing. It's like, it's a different feeling to have that ritual of sort of like you watch the episode with your, you know, with your I'm about to go break this down kind of switch flipped where it's not, you're not just sitting there going, oh, let it wash over me. You're like, okay, what am I analyzing about this?
Right.
And I've been doing that with Game of Thrones last season and this season, and it's kind of fun, but it's really different. And I when every season ends, I don't miss staying up late on Sunday night talking about a TV episode, but it is kind of fun. So, and as a reader, I appreciate it when you guys do your breakdowns of shows like this. So,
yeah, and it's the funny thing about Game of Thrones, because I talked about there wasn't one that would do that. I think that that would have been a great one to do, but I think I was a little bit at a deficit in, and I never got motivated to do Game of Thrones breakdowns because so many people had knowledge of the books and I didn't. So I just felt like, well, I can't really add much to it if I'm doing that. So,
yeah. Well, and when Breaking Bad and Mad Men were both on the air, also there was a lot of. I mean, now you got some slots open if something comes along and you're like, oh, this is great, I'm going to write about this. But you were kind of full up, I would say.
Exactly. And the thing about those, you know, Breaking Bad and The Sopranos is they were not based on books, right? So they were, everything that you saw on a Sunday was original. And so I couldn't do Got because I could say, you know, I would be my usual self. I'd be trying to think of a theory and I'm like, I'm thinking that this is going to happen. Everybody's like, oh no, everybody dies there. That your theory is a pain in the ass. It's never going to happen. Stop writing it because we've already read the books and none of the things that you predicted can happen because all those characters are dead. So I never did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder sometimes you talk about all those characters are dead. The setting of Mad Men, I mean, part of it is just let's do a show set in this period. But I wonder if that offers them a little bit, whether it's in the finale or whether it's just us looking at it, is these are stories of people who were living 45 years ago, you know, 45, 50 years ago. So I don't know. That gives us a different perspective on the stories that we're telling. These people are all, you know, if these people were real people, they would be mostly either very old or dead by now. Mm-hmm. And we've got a window into their lives as they lived it, but they did it. And then, you know, and that was it. And I think that adds, for me, that adds an extra layer to the, you know, what like you said, this show is about life and living life. And I feel like it adds a little something to have it be, these are people from the past. This already happened. They lived their lives. And, you know, as opposed to who knows what will happen next because the future, it's like, no, we know what happens next.
Right. Right. Exactly.
There's one more Mad Men letter we got, which was from Mina in the 650, definitely not a hobo. This is Mina watched the Mad Men pilot again.
Oh, yeah.
And said that watching the pilot can often enhance your viewing of the penultimate and ultimate episode. and let's see what the points are about themes. It's the smoking, the first look at 1960s through a thick curtain of smoke. Is this Chekhov's gun waiting to go off now that Betty is dying from the very thing Don spent four seasons to helping to convince people to do? That's powerful. Speaking of Betty, the contrast between Betty of the pilot and Betty of the penultimate episode, subtle but powerful. In that first episode, Betty defers to Don on the question of seeking a psychiatrist for her nervous condition. We all know how that ended up going for her. Finally, in last night's episode, penultimate episode, she's finding her own voice and having ultimate agency over her body, despite her husband's attempts to control her mortality. And another line from the pilot coming home to roost, Dawn to Rachel, you're born alone and you die alone, and this world just drops a bunch of rules on top of you to make you forget those facts. But I never forget. I'm living like there's no tomorrow because there isn't one.
Yeah, that to me is the a great line. And I know that when I went back at the beginning of this season to watch all the I've taught the first season a couple times at California College of the Arts visual studies class that I teach. So I know season one pretty well. But when I went back to write about all of my favorite pre-season seven episodes, I had to come up with 10 episodes. So I rewatched a lot of stuff from season one. And that definitely comes up. And I think that is – now, normally I would say yes, absolutely. And that could be how it is, because he is alone and he's happily alone. So I think that there's a difference between being alone – and how he's talking about that in season one with alone in season seven. I think he's learned so much about himself that he's okay with where he is. But I also think that the problem of looking at the first season for clues to how it ends, and this is given everything we know about Matt Weiner learning from David Chase, two people who really don't believe people can change, which is, I think that's partly true. I think if we think about it that way and we think, okay, here's two of television's greatest series creators, and they both have this philosophy that people can't change. I think that's a big mistake, because it's not black and white. There's a gray area there. They believe that, but they give you many options of people who do change in their shows. But those people are outliers. So I think if you think of Don, you know, season one is going to predict how it ends in season seven. What you take away from that is that he had any kind of change. And I think season seven specifically shows you he has changed. So everything about season one, and I think it's kind of convenient to go back and look at it and say everything you want to know about the finale is going to be found in the first season or a specific episode in the first season. I think that's really short-sighted, and it takes away from Matt Weiner's very clear story in season seven that Don has changed, and events in his life he's addressed, and addressing them has made him change, whether it's the affair with Sylvia and that he gets caught and Sally finds him and and that starts a whole thing where he confesses to his at work about his real childhood in the Hershey's pitch, and then he tells Sally and Gene and all his kids about how he actually really grew up. He's changed so much. So I actually don't think that season one is a mirror on what's going to happen in season two. Although I think you're fine if he's sitting on a beach and he's looking out in the waves and he's all by himself. Fine, I'm cool with that.
All right, well, we'll find out. I feel like that's a good way to end it. This is how we're going to end this episode.
Yeah,
You know, it's hard.
We
hard
just
to
didn't
find a
have like 20,000 words written about how we were going to end this podcast.
Yeah, introspection. consider everybody out there listening. Just Tim and I are looking at the horizon.
We're looking at the horizon.
Wondering.
Saying goodbye to this podcast. And you know what's going to happen, right? Next week's letters are going to be people disappointed in our finale.
Or they're all going to be mocking us for getting wrong the fact that he's totally D.B. Cooper and he jumps out of a plane and we see him fall.
Right.
And the music that plays in the background is the Mad Men theme song. And you go, oh, it was that all along. And then Matt Weiner steps from behind a curtain and goes, thank you for watching my show. The end. And there's a lightning bolt. That's totally what's going to happen.
If that happens, we won't be doing a podcast.
No, this podcast is over.
I will be under a blanket. Yeah. Everything I know, everything I've ever learned is crushed.
Gone. All right. Well, here's how you can reach us and tell us what you thought of the Mad Men finale. And if you've got any other questions about other stuff, you want to talk about pilot trailers that have made you angry, we could we can get all that out. Things that you think aren't a thing. All of those things, you can reach us, podcast at tvtalkmachine.com. You can go to facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. You can tweet us at TVTM. Or to us personally, I'm Jay Snell, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it. We'll see you all next week. Tim, thanks a lot. Pleasure as always.
We'll see you next week.